soprano Sylvia McNair is our guest today here on Crossover. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, Jill.
Welcome to Crossover. I don't know where to start with you. You have so many talents, and I just found out that Sylvia was in radio many, many years ago. Tell us a little bit about that.
One of my five part-time jobs to get myself through graduate school was as an announcer slash producer at WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana. Oh. I was a student at the wonderful Indiana University School of Music, now the Jacobs School of Music. And I was hired probably because I could pronounce opera titles in French and German and Italian. I don't know, because as a singer, of course, I had lots of foreign language training. But I loved my job in radio. I think radio is the best because, you know, you don't have to worry about how you look.
Oh, yes. I think that's one of the major advantages.
One of my great challenges when I was a radio announcer was that they assigned me the Saturday morning sign-on shift. So I was at the station by 5:30 a.m.,
yes,
6 a.m.
It's always fun.
And then I had the Sunday night sign-off.
Off, which is 1:30 a.m. or
exactly.
Something like that.
And I had a voice lesson at 8 a.m. Monday morning. So that's what my weekends were like. And it's a good thing I was in my 20s because I sure couldn't do it now.
Well, we have to start even before that. You were a violinist. I was surprised to find that out.
Indeed. I actually started taking violin lessons when I was 7 and pursued it very seriously, went to college as a violin major. My dream when I was growing up in Ohio was to join the Cleveland Orchestra and be a member of that phenomenal musical organization.
Probably one of the best in the world.
I would. Being an Ohio native, I'm prejudiced slightly, I suppose, but I would say it is the greatest. Now that's dangerous here in Philadelphia.
Well, that's all right. We have many, many recordings with Zell conducting,
yeah.
and it is, they are spectacular recordings.
And that's the orchestra that opened my ears, because mm-hmm. that's the orchestra I listened to so frequently as a child. I went to a lot of concerts with my parents, and I was in love with Severance Hall. I was in love, still am, with Blossom Center, the summer home of the Cleveland Orchestra. And they're just the nicest group of musicians. So, and I am an Ohioan, so
now,
I'm,
but you,
I'm a little prejudiced.
But you don't live there now.
I don't. I live right outside New York City now.
Well, that's, again, one has to keep up with you. Sylvia McNair, a great operatic career.
Thank you.
And a sudden change, is it sudden or is it?
It's not so sudden. I'll tell you, when I was growing up, I never dreamed that I would get 20 years in the classical music world as a professional singer. I mean, it's like I said, I was a violinist. I never even imagined I would get to have the singing career that I've had. I've gone through my 20 plus years as a professional singer with shock and awe.
Well, if you saw Sylvia McNair, you'd say, what do you mean 20 years? Because she doesn't look a day over 30.
So. Oh, thank you. I'm many days
no,
over 30.
But really, this is the truth. And of course, you're doing is it a cabaret act now
well,
that you're
yes,
doing?
Well, yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to sidestep your question. But after, you know, it's sort of, nothing, when you get into your 40s, girls, at least, I don't know about guys, but girls start asking different questions, and those questions require different answers. And I certainly went through that same process. But I realized in about 2002, when I really did have a full 20 years in opera and classical music tucked under my belt, that I really wanted to spend the next 20 years of my singing life, as long as I could still keep singing, I wanted to spend it doing songs from the musical theater rep, which is music I've always loved and never really had the time and the space in my life or career to do. So my last opera was the summer of 2002, and I did some symphony orchestra concerts of classical music following that point. But at that point, I did have 20 years tucked under my belt, and I decided like I said, as long as I could still sing, I wanted to change the songs.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting, because you were at the height of your career. You were a Marian Anderson awardee in
yes.
1990. Congratulations.
A Philadelphia native.
Oh, yes. And then, of course, you are known world over as a Mozart specialist. When I heard your name, of course, I think opera. And when I heard that you were doing this whole new thing with your career, I felt that it was wonderful and showed your versatility, but it was a surprise at a young age because you really are not, your voice is not over. In many cases, you find that singers have lost the technical prowess, shall we say, at a certain point, and they don't, you know, they feel, well, it's time, you know, maybe we should do something else. But you were really at the peak of your career, and you've decided not to sing opera anymore. Is that right?
I feel like I have to defend my singer species. I'm not sure we lose our technical prowess as much as we lose our drive. Let me just say that life as an opera singer is a difficult life. I spent most of those 20 plus years on the road, mm-hmm. living out of suitcases and living in hotel rooms and living in other people's apartments. And it's not an easy life. It's a very, very stressful life. And I also want to say that the first 10 or 12 years are very exciting, you know, traveling all over the world, and every debut is so thrilling. But after about 10 or 12 years, you start to get tired.
Oh, I would imagine so. I mean, you're a gypsy in a sense.
Yeah. And it's very hard on relationships. Mm. I mean, I spent so much of my life singing and working and living in Europe. While I was at the top of the top, I mean, I was bouncing around from Vienna to Salzburg to Berlin to London. I mean, these are the classical music capitals of the universe, really.
And, yes, of course.
And I, like I said, I was having pinch yourself, this really is your life experiences, mm-hmm. almost on a weekly basis. But it is very stressful. I missed my family. I missed America.
Yes,
I missed being
that.
Home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course, having something steady, I guess, a nest where you can come to and people that
yeah.
surround you, of course.
And I'm a Cancer. I was born at the end of June, so uh-huh. my nest is
very, very important
to me.
But again, it is always very interesting. Now, of course, you still are singing wonderful, wonderful music. When did you actually start? Now, is it a cabaret act that you do? Or I know you had performed at the Kimmel for Valentine's Day. It must have been really wonderful. I'm sorry I couldn't make it. But you're singing some of the greatest, you know, Kern and Harold Arlen and, I don't know, I'm sure you're just covering the gamut composers for the musical theater.
At the risk of lightning striking through the roof of this studio, I will say that, in my opinion, I'm singing some of the best music I've ever sung in my life. And that's not to in any way diminish the work I did singing Bach and Handel and Mozart and Haydn and Mahler and Brahms and Benjamin Britten and Igor Stravinsky,
sure.
and, because I had amazing, amazing experiences doing that music. But I tell you, there is something to be said for singing in English, my language, and the language of the audiences that I sing to now. It's a lot of fun to sing to the whites of people's eyes and see them mm-hmm. respond to
yes.
great lyrics by Ira Gershwin and Larry Hart and Cole mm-hmm. Porter and Stephen Sondheim. And in any case, yes, I'm now doing, like I said, I just changed the songs. I'm pouring my heart into it like never before. And
oh, it's
I
wonderful.
Sing songs by Harold Arlen and Cole Porter and George Gershwin and Richard Rodgers and Johnny Mercer. And I'm just
incredible.
I'm having so much fun.
It's also the American musical theater and beyond. I think that I can imagine when you have an instrument like your voice, which will do whatever you want it to do at this stage.
Not every day, but thank you for saying so.
You know, unless you stay on the radio until 1 a.m. but certainly I can understand the joy of performing that music. But
let me tell you one of the other great joys about doing the rep that I'm doing now, mm-hmm. and especially in cabaret venues. I do my one woman show usually for a run of 8 shows a week for a couple of weeks every year at the Algonquin.
Oh, in New York.
In the Oak Room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
In New York City. And the room seats 90 people, mm-hmm. 90 people. And that means that you can have eye contact and sing for extended measures to every single person in the room.
Very, very
intimate. you have the availability of really interacting with them. And if a certain person responds to something, you can riff on it with them between songs. I mean, it's very much more direct and open and honest and vulnerable. And
also, just as an element of improvisation there, I guess.
Is there ever? I haven't done two shows that are the same. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, in the classical music world, I think about standing on the stage at the Metropolitan Opera. You know, the first row of seats is already about, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, 60 feet away from you. And I wasn't satisfied in my ability to really contact people when I was singing in those huge spaces, opera houses and concert halls.
You obviously did contact, make contact, but I understand what you're saying. It's a much more intimate world.
I mean,
the Algonquin certainly historically wasn't that the Round Table of the literati of New York City, and any of these very, very historic, wonderful places, and you're singing the music of the many of the composers of a certain era.
That's right.
I think you would feel if you went up to the Michener Museum has a wonderful exhibit. That's a standing exhibit about, you know, with George S. Kaufman, and then of course the Hammersteins and so on. It's really amazing, and of course all this great music that was written mm-hmm. in that period, which is really probably the early 30s and 40s and so on. So it's a whole different approach too, isn't it? Stylistically.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, it is a different approach in that I'm often using a microphone. So maybe from my radio days, I don't know, or my study with Eileen Farrell when I was in school. Eileen Farrell, of course, being one of the supreme examples.
How lucky you
of
were.
Living on both sides of the musical fence, as Andre Previn used to say to me. I mean, you know, Eileen Farrell could sing a Wagner opera at the Met one night and the next night do a jazz set at a club across the street. So I don't sing Wagner, and I haven't sung that many jazz sets, but I did get to study singing with Eileen Farrell, and I completely forget where I was going with this.
Stylistically.
Oh, thank you. So in any case, maybe it was my studies with Eileen Farrell that helped me know how to use a microphone, but it is true that when you're singing with a microphone, the sound system is doing a lot of the heavy lifting for you. That said, you still have to put good stuff into the mic so that something good comes out of the speakers.
But also differently. I mean, I would think certainly if you're singing opera, you're projecting, you know, differently.
That's right. You know, I often say, I don't know if there are actors, television and film and stage actors out there who listen to your show, but I often say that I think there's a parallel for singers between the kind of singing that we do to fill the Metropolitan Opera or the Academy of Music mm-hmm. or the big concert hall at the Kimmel Center. It's an explosive kind of energy that you use. Whereas when you're with a microphone, your energy, your vocal energy has to be more implosive.
Yes.
You have to implode and go in. Less is more.
Of course.
When you're on a microphone, the same as it is when you're on a camera, a close-up shot for an actor. It has to be very, very inside yourself, rather than exploding to your energy to fill the theater.
As an addition to that, that's why we have so many singers who have really no voices at all, and they sound terrific on the mic, and they are pop singers.
Absolutely,
a lot of them, really.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Crossover. Our guest today, Sylvia McNair, has achieved a level of success in the operatic and concert world that is enviable, with mastery of repertoire that ranges from Mozart to Benjamin Britten. It is all the more intriguing, then, to witness the change of direction she has made in her career, never sacrificing her exceptional musical understanding and vocal precision, and transforming it into a new and engaging genre. Now, is classical over for you, I mean, in terms of performance?
Oh, you know, never say never, Grandma always said. I think if the Philadelphia Orchestra called me and asked me to sing the Ravel Scheherazade, I'd be here in a New York minute.
Yes.
I have actually sung the Scheherazade with them, and it was a wonderful experience.
Gorgeous work.
Yeah. Well, Ravel is pop music, isn't it, really?
Oh, yes. And what was the famous quote that he said to George Gershwin when Gershwin came to study with him? He says, "Why do you want to be a second-rate Ravel when you're a first-rate Gershwin?"
George Gershwin actually went to Maurice Ravel asking for lessons in orchestration.
Yes.
Well, and he went to the master, didn't he? Because Ravel was a brilliant orchestrator.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exactly right. Ravel said, "Mr. Gershwin, how much money did you make last year? And Gershwin, it was a six-figure number in the late 20s or early 30s. And, you know, that was a lot. It's a lot of money now. It was really a lot of money in those years.
But, of course, the French Impressionists were the ones that, you know, adopted the jazz idiom very, very much. And, of course, the harmonically, the whole structure, it's very, very close. For you personally, did you just cut off from this? Was this a very conscious decision to do something else beside have fun and to kind of explore another world? Or is the rest of your background going to continue in some way in terms of your performance?
Well, I would say yes to both. It was a very conscious choice, and I do underline the word choice. It was a choice that I made. I remember it was sort of a snapshot in my mind that went on and on and on, but the image in my mind was as if I was standing facing the keyboard of my piano, and on one side of the music stand was a stack of the Mozart operas that I would need to launch into, the Strauss operas, the repertoire that you start doing in your 40s and your 50s, which is not the same rep that you do in your 20s and your 30s. It's bigger rep, it's heavier, slightly heavier rep. So on one side of the music stand on my piano was that stack of music, and on the other side of the music stand on the piano were songbooks of songs by Harold Arlen and Cole Porter and George Gershwin and Richard Rodgers and Stephen Sondheim and Johnny Mercer. And boy, it was as clear in my mind and my heart as could be where I really wanted to pour my energies and to spend my next 20 years singing.
So I think you might have said this in the beginning, but it was also a decision about the kind of effort that you put in. I think, of course, you have to, you know, you singing pop and the lyric is terribly important as well. But physically, is it as demanding? Certainly not.
Well, and I had said yes to both of your questions. The second part of your question was, you know, something about the technical demands. Believe me, doing a program like my 75 and sometimes longer minute program, cabaret program, is really hard work, actually. It takes a lot of mental stamina. It takes a lot of vocal stamina, even though the microphone and the sound system are doing the heavy lifting. You are out there, I'm out there by myself, me, my pianist, and that's it. And we have to make a show that lasts almost an hour and a half, makes sense. It has to be interesting for the audience. It has to be challenging for us. It has, you know, it's a lot to remember. I mean, I have something like 3,000 lyrics to remember in every performance that I do, plus the chat that goes on in between.
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's a different kind of expending of energy. I mean, there's no question that, you know, you look at all of the pop singers. I mean, they work very hard. If you look at the big names through the years, I remember watching Rosemary Clooney, who I adored, perform.
Did I.
Oh, she was amazing. And she was just drenched. I mean, you know, as she was. But that's what it is. Being a performer is like that. It is very demanding. And no matter what even if you go on radio, you have a script in front, not a script, but you have reference notes in front of you sometimes, or you extemporize, or even doing the fun drive. You are really, really working hard, but it's very different from the kind of thing that you would do on the operatic stage. And that's what I'm saying. Did you one day say, oh, I'm tired. I really want to do something different. And I know it requires effort, but it's a different kind of effort.
It is a different kind of effort. There was certainly a midlife transitional period that brought this on. I mean, and there are many personal strains in that answer, which we don't need to go into here. I will say that as far as perspiration is concerned,
keeps you skinny.
I used to sweat enormously on opera stages because, especially singing the role, which I did many, 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 many times, the role of Susanna in Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro. Because the role of Susanna is, in fact, so aerobic, you're just running around all night long, being the most active, most intelligent girl in the room, taking care of everybody and covering bases for everybody and making sure that the count doesn't take further advantage of you and that you keep your husband in line and all of these things. I would perspire buckets and buckets and buckets. I mean, it was funny, actually, how much I would sweat during that 4 hours on
well,
stage.
Well, no, I'm sure. But it's, again, it's a whole different mindset, I think. I think what you're doing is it's more casual in the way, but you're using every part of you. I
absolutely.
Mean, that's what I'm saying. But it
yes.
is a more casual. It's you can be yourself very, very much.
And many, many of my friends
yes.
have said to me, "I am so happy to see you doing cabaret because now we as audience members have
yes.
a chance to know you better."
Yeah.
And in fact, that is what I do. I simply zip open my heart,
yes.
my soul, my life experience, for whatever it is, good, bad, up, down,
right. mm-hmm.
high, low.
And there are many songs for all categories.
They're just. And I just share it with anyone who cares to listen.
Well, we all care to listen and are delighted that you found time to come and visit us here at the studios, Sylvia McNair. What lies ahead for you next? Are you going on tour or have you been on tour?
I'm getting ready to go to South America for two weeks. I'm going to sing some concerts there. I'm doing this summer, I'm doing one of my dream roles. I have wanted to sing Mrs. Anna in The King and I for a long time. So I'm finally getting a chance. People are giving me opportunities now and letting me out of the opera box to do some of my favorite roles. So I get to sing Mrs. Anna this summer. By the way, if there are any producers out there in Radioland, another part I'm dying to sing is Desiree in Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music.
Oh,
love
what a wonderful
piece.
Role, yeah.
So, and I do a lot of concerts, a lot of programs like My Pianist and I did last evening at the Kimmel Center.
But this is again, pop music.
It's all musical theater rep. Yes, pop music.
Okay. And of course, the actual, the musical comedy itself. Have you're The King and I, perhaps, but is that going to be?
Well, I sure hope so, because I would love to do more shows. So, but, you know, Broadway producers are not exactly knocking my front door down saying, come work for us.
I don't think they're knocking on anyone's door right now. Broadway is as usual, like everything else, is having its hardship. But I know the Lincoln Center group does want to, I think they should think very, very hard about preserving some of these great musical comedies.
Oh.
Because their performances, of course, are great. However, I remember the days when Broadway was a very, very different place. And of course, it's not like that anymore.
It has changed. It has changed. Absolutely right.